Mr. Speaker, this is the sixth consecutive year that I'm rising in this honorable house to add my voice to the debate on the budget and appropriation bill. Mr. Speaker, over the past 5 years, I participated as a member of the opposition. And in reviewing the former government's budget, Mr. Speaker, I asked three fundamental questions. One, in the context of fiscal discipline, are total revenue, spending, and the surplus or deficit appropriate in the light of economic conditions, the country's development needs, and the government's taxing capacity? Two, in the context of effective allocation, are the government's priorities right for building the country, pursuing development strategies, and achieving planned objectives? And three, Mr. Speaker, in the context of efficient services, is the government providing efficient and accessible public service and giving people value for money? Today, Mr. Speaker, I am addressing this House as a member of government for the first time, and I believe it's only proper that I use the same yardstick to measure this current budget and appropriation bill. Mr. Speaker, this budget is on course for the promised land. The Minister for Finance is experienced in navigating turbulent times. In 1997, Mr. Speaker, when the Star of Freedom rose in this country, what obtained in St. Lucia then? We were confronted with the total dislocation of the economic fabric of this country. Social chaos in St. Lucia. There was a malaise in this country, a shift system in our schools. All types of nonsense, as if it was Disneyland of anything goes. Between 1997 and 2006, this current Prime Minister and Minister for Finance brought the fundamental drivers of growth back to center stage. Key economic objectives were job creation, poverty alleviation, and the overall growth of the economy. At the end of the decade of Kenyonomics, what was the result, Mr. Speaker? Unemployment was reduced to 14.6%. In fact, in the first 3 years, between 1997 and 2000, unemployment was reduced to 16%, and the IMF can confirm that. There was economic growth of 5.4%, Mr. Speaker. Wealth was more evenly distributed in St. Lucia at the end of 2006, and indigence had declined significantly in this country. And Mr. Speaker, despite borrowing to build secondary schools, which ended the shift system, despite borrowing to build new health centers and police stations, the Bodile correctional facilities, and infrastructure works in every constituency, our debt-to-GDP ratio was below the prudential limit established by the ECCB. Whilst members opposite are talking about T Canal and Gubedmati Canal, there is no other government in the history of this country that built more T Canals, more roads than the Labour Party government between 1997 and 2006. This was the period when people began to understand what basic needs were all about. In all little communities without electricity, who built more trenches and built holes to erect poles to take electricity to Bhutan and a number of other communities? When members opposite at one time in government said that the people of Bhutan should relocate instead of bringing electricity to Bhutan. when they brought electricity to Bhutan, Mr. Speaker, the chickens did juve because they didn't believe it was already night time. Because God said, let there be light, and there was light in Bhutan. Mr. Speaker, despite this achievement, notwithstanding that the different programs, which respectively address income, assets, and human resource poverty, were taking effect, showing improvements in the lives of the people of this country, while service delivery and social grants were reaching an ever-increasing proportion of society, poor people and the social fabric that ensures their survival continue to be vulnerable. Hence, if St. Lucia had to move to a higher trajectory of development, the overriding challenges in this regard are employment creation and reduction in poverty. I will consider the past 5 years, Mr. Speaker, as a temporary diversion on the road from labor to labor. Because I have said in this Honorable House before, over the past 5 years, we saw budgets pregnant with reckless desires, and the people of this country could not participate in the ill-advised fantasies of the former government. Mr. Speaker, the Minister for Finance and Prime Minister of this country has clearly stated that the reduction of public debt is a key macroeconomic goal for our government. Mr. Speaker, there are 5 key elements of efforts to successfully reduce public debt to more sustainable levels and help this country achieve its growth potential. Fiscal consolidation, prudent debt management strategies, asset sales, privatization, reducing vulnerabilities to exogenous shocks, and growth-enhancing reforms. This government has decided that a combination of these elements is needed. This is why, Mr. Speaker, this budget priorities are, and I quote from pages 13 and 14, I quote, Mr. Speaker, I can now crystallize the approach of the government as a three-pronged strategy for economic turnaround. 1, job creation. We will create jobs by a series of short to medium-term measures that will boost our productive sectors and provide much-needed support to our social agenda. 2, construction expansion. We will introduce measures to encourage investment in construction and housing aimed at creating further jobs and restoring our social and economic infrastructure. And 3, fiscal consolidation. We will introduce a set of fiscal measures to improve government's revenue base, reduce the deficit, and achieve fiscal strengthening. On page 14, the Prime Minister continued, and I quote, NICE will be pursued along 3 areas of intervention. 1, legislative action. This will focus on reviewing and enacting legislation that will facilitate and generate employment in St. Lucia. 2, fiscal measures. This will focus on government providing deliberate incentives and support to the private sector to create jobs. And 3, direct intervention. This will focus on government's job creation program, which will create employment immediately. Unquote. Mr. Speaker, there is no single solution to unemployment because there is no single cause. The complex bundles of policies needed to reduce unemployment in St. Lucia requires, however, a well-coordinated and coherent approach which recognizes the usefulness of policy instruments, each of which is designed to deal with the different causes of high unemployment. Policies which have strong, well-structured training components and industrial policies that encourage the development of new products and processes hold the key to a permanent reduction in unemployment. Mr. Speaker, this is why this Minister for Finance has engaged in a whole spectrum of issues to immediately introduce fresh injection of capital in the veins of this country. And as poverty and unemployment is reduced, Mr. Speaker, it means that more St. Lucians would have access to finance and they can make a more effective demand for goods and services in the economy. But members opposite, Mr. Speaker, and I'll come to that in a few moments, while they have been speaking about that in this Honorable House, year in, year out, and I remember my very first presentation in this House, when most persons were telling me, go to the House and condemn VAT. I didn't, Mr. Speaker, because I knew it was one of the options that were available to us. And as there was tariff liberalization, at some point we'll have no choice. But I was concerned about the implementation of VAT so that it wouldn't burden the poor. I believe that the member for Catrice East and the member for Sucre adequately dealt with the VAT issue with the dexterity that requires no addition on my part, Mr. Speaker. However, I must say that this budget is not about raising money through barren taxes, but taxes that are fertile, Mr. Speaker. Taxes that will bring forth fruit. The security of our country, which is of paramount importance in the midst of all of that. We are raising money for the provision for the aged and deserving poor in this country. It was time it was done, Mr. Speaker. We cannot allow those who have toiled all their days to end in extreme poverty and possibly starvation. It is rather hard that an elderly St. Lucian, Mr. Speaker, have to find his or her way to the gates of the tomb, bleeding and footsore through the brambles and thorns of poverty. We want to cut a new path through it, an easier one, a more pleasant one, through fields of waving bananas without black cigar token, Mr. Speaker. We propose to do more by means of the budget. We are raising money to provide against the evils and the sufferings that follow from unemployment. We are providing money to enable us to develop the resources of our own land. I do not believe that any fair-minded St. Lucian, fair-minded man or woman, Mr. Speaker, who challenges the justice and the fairness of the object which we have in view in raising this money. Instead of commending the budget, they sit across, most of them, not all, and say all types of things. Although, I must admit that compared to previous years, they were well behaved in this Honorable House. This new Labour government, considering the plight of the people, cannot increase the specific gravity of the trouble. We cannot add to the anxiety which they bear with such patience and fortitude for the past 5 years. We cannot tell the people of this country that things are bad and we cannot bring relief to them. In fact, Mr. Speaker, in very turbulent times, this is when you need to ensure that there is transfer to the most vulnerable amongst us. By that test, I challenge them to judge the budget. These are the taxes. These are our proposals. What is it our opponents object to? Where is the injustice and wrong? Do they object to what we are spending the money on, Mr. Speaker? We are imposing no burdens upon the earnings of any working man, a woman. I am sure that the vast majority of the middle class of this country will escape additional burdens. We put no burden upon the necessities of life, of anyone. We are raising money by means that make it no more difficult for men and women to live. We are raising it for making provision for the hundreds of thousands of St. Lucians in this country who have nothing between them and starvation in old age except the charity of the parish. We are trying hard to ensure that in this country, no man suffers hunger in the dark days of sickness, breakdown in health, and unemployment, which visits so many of us. And at this juncture, Mr. Speaker, I want to refer to a few arguments advanced by members opposite before I resume normal navigation. Mr. Speaker, I heard the leader of the opposition indicating that we were able to achieve what we achieved when Labour was in office because things were nice. But this is not true, Mr. Speaker. This argument is vulnerable to the facts. And in this regard, I quote from the Caribbean, from vulnerability to sustained growth on page 22. And I'll make it a document of the House, Mr. Speaker. It says, and I quote, since 1998, a year after the Labour Party got into office, average ratios of public debt to GDP in the region grew rapidly from 65% in 1997 to over 90% by 2004. Reflecting the debt buildup, fiscal accounts worsened sharply during 1998 to 2004 in the Caribbean. The average overall fiscal balance declined in every country apart from the Bahamas, Guyana, and Haiti during 1998-2004. Compared with 1990-1997, as public debt grew, interest costs also rose. Hence, part of the explanation for the deterioration in the overall fiscal balance is the rise in interest-related expenditure. Unquote. Mr. Speaker, this quotation also takes care of the confused and hasty criticism of the member for Kasu Southeast, who was mixing up economic growth with overall fiscal balance. And if the member wanted to blame the Labour Party government at the time, he should have probably referred more to the primary fiscal balance, because it omits the interest rates and it will give you a better idea about the fiscal stance of the government. Mr. Speaker, when I heard the member for Castries Central referring to Greenberg and Kosovo Run, I knew the budget was good. Immediately, I knew that the opposition cannot advance any logical and cogent argument to support their opposition to the budget. But in fact, they have not vehemently opposed. In fact, I believe that the posture assumed suggests to me that they have supported the budget. The member for Denry South is an economist, and I was listening attentively to hear him advance some serious economic arguments to really disable this budget. But again, he supports the budget based on his very nice and eloquent presentation in this Honorable House. The member for Mykonos used her presentation to cast a stone of provocation at the windows of the room where the external relations review is being conducted. While I do not fall easy prey to provocation, Mr. Speaker, I will give an adumbrate of what is to come shortly. But let me make it abundantly clear at this juncture, Mr. Speaker. We are prepared to navigate the uncharted waters. This is an experienced captain, a man who's well respected, a serious and organized individual with a team that is competent to assist him in the job at hand. This budget, in a real sense, Mr. Speaker, can be viewed in the context of the world situation conspiring to push us beyond our comfort zone. And just like the mother eagle who disturbs the feathery comfort of a nest to force the young eaglets into flying. And so, the circumstances of our time have forced us to try our wings. And I've always said that, you know, the thrill of flying always begins with the fear of falling. We are brave, and we are going to deal with the problems of our time frontally, without fear. Our generation, the new leadership today, is being called upon to grapple with the challenges of our time. It is our responsibility to come to terms with the changing structure of international relations in the context of economic globalization and its social and geopolitical consequences. The rise of new economic powers, which now challenge the club of the powerful, has now changed the face of international politics, with the BRICS now rivaling the G8. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister and I only recently returned from the Summit of the Americas, where this new dynamic was clearly being played out. Brazil, Mr. Speaker, as a new economic power, is insisting that the shaping of world relations cannot be the prerogative of a few countries. This goes against the grain of traditional global and hemispheric relations and cannot be ignored. And it is now, and it is not only Brazil, Mr. Speaker, in this hemisphere, but also Russia in Europe, India and China in Asia, and South Africa and the African continent, which are also clamoring to be at the table of international economic and political decision-making. Closer to home, Mr. Speaker. The dramatic economic changes now taking place in Cuba, a country which has been of great assistance to our people and country over the years, signals that this country is going to play an increasingly significant role in future economic relations of the Caribbean. This will force our rethinking of the role and responsibility of our Caribbean community, CARICOM. Mr. Speaker, we regard our regional relations as extending beyond CARICOM into the wider Caribbean, to include Cuba and the Dominican Republic, which are emerging as important regional players. So, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of External Affairs is quite cognizant of the call for St. Lucia to reclaim and regain its position as an innovator in the Caribbean community's activities. As we move towards that leadership position, Mr. Speaker, in this region, our foreign policy will have to capture the commonality of country interests and priorities that we, the smaller members of the community, cannot compromise upon. Mr. Speaker, one of the first initiatives of our government was to undertake a survey of our external relations in the context of international relations. This will help us decide which traditional policies can be retained and what new or innovative foreign policy directions need to be introduced in the new global environment. Mr. Speaker, we will also need to focus on critical changes to the responsibilities and contributions of our various social partners. Those relations that influence our economy and are affected by changes abroad must be carefully managed. We must therefore closely collaborate with our private economic sectors in industry, agriculture, and tourism in particular, our various social partners which interact with the external world and our workers' organizations. Mr. Speaker, we will need to consider what changes can be made to our decision-making institutions. In particular, the Ministry of External Affairs, International Trade and Civil Aviation. We also need to review the ministry's relations with other government departments concerned with external relations. The Ministry of External Affairs must be seen primarily as a facilitator of overall government decision-making and implementation. As this evolves in other spheres of government and in matters relating to them that extend beyond our shores. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, our foreign policy review will marry the conclusions of this exercise with those enunciated in the foreign relations section of our 2011 elections manifesto, appropriately titled, Mr. Speaker, Our Blueprint for Growth. Mr. Speaker, we intend to proceed in constant consultation as we chart a new course for our country. We will endeavor to be inclusive and not exclusive, and in this regard, we will solicit the contribution of members opposite. Because I believe, Mr. Speaker, the time has come for us to put durable policies in place that irrespective of which government occupies the corridors of power, we can power ahead with consistency and purpose. Mr. Speaker, for the last 25 years, successive St. Lucian Prime Ministers and Ministers of External Affairs have alerted our people to the changes in international affairs that would affect us, economically and politically. The signal initially came from England and Europe, which in coming to terms with changing international economic relations, had to contend with the establishment of the World Trade Organization, the WTO. The advent of the WTO saw a dramatic altering of the trade relations between ourselves and the United Kingdom. the privileged position of our bananas in the British market were challenged, and the British government, which had protected our position since the mid-70s, was now helpless to assist. Even within the Caribbean itself, Mr. Speaker, we saw no institutional response to the encroachment of a much larger and more cost-effective producer, the Dominican Republic, which moved rapidly to occupy our market space. Over the last 25 years, Mr. Speaker, those changes in our banana trade have a direct negative effect on the livelihoods of our farmers, and our complaints have had no positive effect on the Europeans. Their response has simply been that we must develop the capabilities to respond to the enhanced liberalization of economic production arrangements and markets. They have now offered us an economic partnership agreement, the EPA, to facilitate, through economic and technical assistance, new economic activities in industry and agriculture that could be internationally competitive. And speaking about the EPA, we signed on to the EPA, Mr. Speaker, and the former government was fast asleep, while the EU was giving us support to implement the EPA. And so funding that was available for that purpose is no longer available. But I'm pleased to inform this Honorable House that currently we are working on implementation of the EPA. But everyone in this country can see that our banana trade has been unable to respond adequately and that our farming community has been left stranded. The previous government showed itself as non-responsive to dealing with the black sigatoka disease, which had ravaged the banana farm since 2012. No kind of significant response. When the current Minister for Agriculture raised it, he was called all types of names by the former Minister for Agriculture, trying to deny a fact that we knew full well existed, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my ministry intends to take a more targeted approach towards dealing with the European Union, particularly in identifying potential economic activities for trade. As the banana trade becomes less lucrative and less able to provide sustainable employment. We have been talking about diversification all the time, Mr. Speaker, but it's not easy to diversify into another crop. One cannot identify another crop that can easily provide a weekly income to the farmers, and the other areas that the farmers can move into already entrenched in competition. And some of the advantages that we had in terms of reducing unit cost of transportation is not readily available to the farmers. So the set of circumstances have forced thousands of families into poverty, Mr. Speaker. In seeking out alternative activities and institutional arrangements, Mr. Speaker, we must leverage our previous Windward Island successes in the banana industry. And we must extend to the wider economic space of the OECS Economic Union. The Ministry of External Affairs and International Trade proposes greater engagement and coordination with the Ministries of Commerce and Economic Affairs to set the framework for policy efficiency both at home and in our sub-region. It is in that context, Mr. Speaker, that my ministry will seek to persuade the OECS as a group to begin to reevaluate our position on the Economic Partnership Agreement. This must be done in collaboration with private sector partners in the OECS as well as CARICOM region. We must confront the new global realities frontally, as we must abandon all myths in the face of current realities. Mr. Speaker, in the words of a former president of the United States, the dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate for the stormy present. And for those who may want to doubt the veracity of my utterances, I urge you to reflect upon the UK's attitude to the Caribbean's complaint about their discriminatory air passenger duty. St. Lucia, as part of the OECS sub-region, will insist that CARICOM consolidate new trade and production frameworks with both the United States and Canada, as have our Central American neighbors and the Dominican Republic. This must be done to ensure that our smaller OECS countries within CARICOM will not be left behind. As honorable members would be aware, in the aftermath of the recent Summit of the Americas, the government of Trinidad and Tobago wasted no time in consolidating new trade relationships with some Central American countries, particularly Panama. Mr. Speaker, we will need to prepare ourselves to convince the European Union, and France in particular, to promote a more integrated relationship with our OECS neighbors of Martinique and Guadeloupe. My ministry welcomes the initiative of those islands towards establishing a relationship with the OECS. However, we must ensure that such a relationship goes beyond the formal and is beneficial in a very real way to both sets of countries. Mr. Speaker, honorable members will be aware that in the recent Summit of the Americas in Cartagena, Colombia, the view was expressed by our own Prime Minister that there is now need at the hemispheric level to collectively undertake a high-level review of the issue of the now overwhelming consumption of drugs in this hemisphere and current methods of dealing with it. Current methods, he observed, are simply not working. This phenomenon, where those operating to gain profit from the trade, in the United States in particular, are moving first into Mexico and then into Central America and the Caribbean sphere, placing extreme pressure on our limited police and surveillance forces and on our country's finances. Hemispheric cooperation is therefore critical to combat this destructive force and to promote our true and real development. At the same summit, Mr. Speaker, our Honorable Prime Minister again took the opportunity to emphasize the special vulnerabilities that affect countries of our small size and the necessity for support for the construction of modes of physical integration of the various economic spaces and physical infrastructures of our countries to enhance economic scale. Our government has taken the decision to join the newly created Latin American and Caribbean Community, permitting ourselves a greater level of cooperation within the wider hemisphere. Our activities in such an arena will require an enhanced competence in languages, understanding of the diplomacy of that area, and involvement in the search for new economic linkages and economic assistance on the part of our public servants and ministries concerned with the development process, as well as with the issue of security in our environment. Mr. Speaker, the Summit of the Americas provided the opportunity for this government to clearly articulate its position on the issue of the inclusion of Cuba in normal hemispheric organizations, meetings, and consultations. As the Honorable Prime Minister put it in his speech to the summit gathering, it is time to heal the wounds of this hemisphere family. I call for the resumption of Cuba to its rightful place in hemispheric deliberations and institutions. Honorable members will recall our long mutually beneficial association with the government of Cuba, which gives political legitimacy for speaking in this way. Mr. Speaker, at the summit in question, country after country called for Cuba to be reintegrated in the region. The Cuba issue, Mr. Speaker, is like an open wound in the heart of the Americas. But we are willing to pursue the end of Cuba's exclusion through patient endeavor. The government is currently considering its relationship with ALBA. As we seek to widen sources of assistance in a period when global recession imposes unexpected difficulties, it is well known that such an association would follow the long and early relations with St. Lucia, with Venezuela, a prime instigator of the ALBA, since the years prior to independence, when that country established a consular presence here in St. Lucia. Our position on the ALBA will soon be clarified, Mr. Speaker. I do not want to speak prematurely on any issue. And this is one of the main reasons why the Prime Minister chose to stay away from making concrete pronouncements. Because there is a review committee. And that review committee, when it submits the report, we shall engage the wider public. Mr. Speaker, the major countries of Latin America are all today taking a deeper interest in the English-speaking Caribbean. In the case of Brazil, for example, we must anticipate the day when that country has ever closer physical and economic relations with the CARICOM states of South America, and as a logical consequence with CARICOM as an institution. Considering that the government of Brazil has now established a diplomatic presence here, St. Lucia will initiate dialogue seeking support for our needs in the areas of education, science and technology, economic planning, agriculture, sports, and physical and infrastructural integration. Mr. Speaker, recently at a meeting of foreign ministers of CARICOM, I had the opportunity to dialogue with my counterpart minister in Brazil. And with alacrity, before I landed in St. Lucia, correspondents reaching me that is interested in exploring some areas in agriculture and some other fields. And so, very, very soon, the Minister for Agriculture and a couple other ministers will be traveling to Brazil for us to explore things that are mutually important to us. We do not want to live parasitically, Mr. Speaker. We want to live symbiotically. Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia has had a long association with the small country of Kuwait through the valuable assistance which we and the rest of the sub-region have received from the Kuwait Development Fund. And the OECS, as an institution, has itself received assistance from Libya in order to pursue our integration efforts. Some OECS countries have gone further into the Middle East to establish relations, particularly with oil-producing states, in search of further development aid. St. Lucia, from its OECS perspective, will be following these initiatives closely. Mr. Speaker, the Asian and Pacific arena is a center of global attention, having recorded dramatic enhancements of the economic capabilities of its countries and influenced international markets as sources of innovation and technology in the last 2 decades. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the global recession seemed hardly to have touched states like China and India, and a country like Australia has benefited tremendously from the fast growth of China. Mr. Speaker, it is important for us to understand that China is today an integral part of the international economic system. As such, China has a major influence on the motion of the global economy and on institutions like the World Bank and their rules and behavior. So at this juncture, and for the time being, Mr. Speaker, it simply remains for me to say that it must be of importance to us in St. Lucia that we should be on appropriate terms with a country of that stature in global affairs. Mr. Speaker, the relevance of certain post-independence institutions created by colonial powers is increasingly being questioned in international circles. The questions revolve around whether institutions created to serve periods of transition from protectionist arrangements to liberalize international economic relations are necessary to the functioning of an international system which has changed so much in the last 2 decades. These comments, Mr. Speaker, are often applied to the African, Caribbean, and Pacific grouping and to the Commonwealth, because presently many African states are quickly becoming major beneficiaries of new demand for the agricultural and mineral commodities. Not much different can be said about the Commonwealth, and even the francophonic grouping that has encompassed largely African states, in the sense that they no longer need the old metropolitan powers to advance or mediate their causes, particularly in international economic relations. Mr. Speaker, these arguments that imply a certain irrelevance of the institutions, like the Commonwealth and the ACP, do not necessarily apply to us. The government will continue to take the view that both the ACP and the Commonwealth, like the United Nations, are appropriate institutional media for the pursuit of our interests at relatively minimum cost. It is important for us to have the immediate air of such larger states through locations like London and Brussels, and for our economic ministries to have direct diplomatic and technical contact through our missions in those locations, and in Geneva, the home of the WTO. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of External Affairs review will be considering the case for more individuals with specialist technical competencies in those locations. Such representatives should have direct line connections with the relevant ministries at home and would be necessary to promote the required political diplomacy. In this regard, Mr. Speaker, it is my expectation that the foreign affairs review now being undertaken will make further recommendations on the issue of what changes will be necessary in the structure of the Ministry of External Affairs and related institutions. Mr. Speaker, I want to now turn to civil aviation, a portfolio that I hold. Mr. Speaker, my comments about the airport redevelopment and its consequences are well documented in Hansard. My position is very clear on the way forward for this particular project, and I do not believe, in the interest of time, Mr. Speaker, I should speak about it today. However, Mr. Speaker, our early challenges, like I predicted, will continue to worsen. And because of the challenges in the regional market for air transportation, we must take a look at LEAD, Mr. Speaker. I remember some time ago persons were questioning whether LEAD was part of a dying breed or a suitable case for treatment. My conclusion, Mr. Speaker, is that it is a suitable case for treatment, because LEAD is the most reliable means of inter-island transport within the OECS. It serves as a vital transportation service for local business persons, traders, as well as the local traveling public. LEAD has been providing that service for decades. Most routes are not profitable for the carrier. Therefore, the challenges confronting LEAD are now very significant to warrant the attention and intervention of our Caribbean islands, Mr. Speaker. No other carrier in any part of the world will come into the Caribbean market and do what LEAD is currently doing. We have seen many come and go, utilizing aircraft too big for the routes that they fly. And it's not a sustainable model. I remember when American Eagle was going to be introduced in the market, and persons were arguing that the arrival of American Eagle would provide competition for LEAD, and therefore airfares would be cheaper. I predicted at the time that the airfares would be much more than what LEAD was charging. And so it came to pass. And where is American Eagle on those routes? Have withdrawn its service on the routes. The routes are simply not profitable. Therefore, the way forward is for us to dissect the anatomy of the operations of LEAD so that we can proffer new solutions to the problems that confront the carrier. You see, the airline industry is not like any other business. This is an industry that has grown tremendously. The demand for air travel has grown over time. However, it does not spell profit for the airline industry. For the simple reason, it's not like selling corned beef. You have a box of corned beef with 24 in it. You sell 12 tonight, you have 12 available for sale tomorrow. You have an aircraft with 100 seats, you sell 50 tickets. From the time that aircraft leaves George F.L. Charles and go to Barbados, the 50 other seats cannot be sold today. It's perishable. And so the challenge the airline industry is confronted with is to actually bring unit cost, unit revenue, and load factors into a type of equilibrium. And it's very difficult to do so. So everybody on Liat's back, Liat not making profit. I challenge any one of them to go and operate Liat and bring Liat into profit. You have carriers that are run very efficiently and run into losses. American Airlines is now in Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Honourable Member, you have 15 minutes remaining to conclude your contribution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I programmed my coordinates accurately so that, again, I can effect a timely landing, Mr. Speaker. Visual flight rules. Mr. Speaker, as I prepare to conclude, I would just like to bring the external relations in a perspective like in capsule form. The sphere of international politics in which we dwell and operate today hardly allows any advantage of familiarity to national policymakers. The sheer scope, intensity, and rapidity of political transformation that has swept the globe has rendered traditional political doctrine superfluous. At the same time, the field of economics has witnessed a widespread restructuring along the lines of free market economics, globalization, formation of regional trade groupings, emergence of new players, and a prevalence of economic power dictating international competition and rivalry. In this scenario, politics and economics have come to be closely involved. Consequently, political ideologies are no longer the predominant driving force behind external relations. Instead, economics has taken over as a crucial determinant of foreign policy making. Obviously, Mr. Speaker, the changed international scenario has brought with it new challenges, which calls for new decisions in the diplomatic sphere to permit the realistic readjustment of economic and political strategies. In light of the foregoing, Mr. Speaker, this new Labour government has seen it fit to reassess, restructure, and reformulate domestic and foreign policy postures. This review is expected to emerge with recommendations to reshape external relations along more realistic and multidimensional lines. For example, Mr. Speaker, an important objective of external relations has come to be identified as its ability to help finance domestic economic reforms. Alignments with other nations must be strategically planned so as to attract foreign capital as a means of re-energizing and modernizing St. Lucia's economy. Mr. Speaker, I want to return specifically to my support for this budget. This budget is pregnant with opportunities for the people of this country and the people of my constituency. Just one road, which was mentioned in the Prime Minister's budget address, the Labri-Bans-Laho Road, although the Prime Minister referred to it as the Labri-Bans-Lagwas Road, it makes a material difference. Because Laho is a road that is much further than Lagos. And the people who were listening to the budget presentation by the Prime Minister were asking me, no, that's not the road. But I told them it was just a little error. It wasn't that the plan had changed. And this road will impact half of the constituency of Labri. So for them, the better days are here, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, having said so, having spoken about the opportunities available to the people of this country and the people in my constituency, it is one thing for government to create opportunities and quite another thing for people to embrace the opportunities created by the government. We cannot get the better days without effort. No country in the world has gotten better days without sacrifices. There are no gains without pains, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, America is what it is today. We hear about the American dream. We hear about the American eagle. The American eagle is flying today because young Americans are prepared to go and die on distant battlefields abroad to ensure that they protect the interests of America. The question is, are we instilling that level of pride in our people, not politicians, so that they will ensure that the St. Lucian Parrot takes flight? You see, politicians on both sides have been under heavy fire by certain persons who have the freedom to write and say whatever they want. But you see, it is not just politicians who currently occupy this house that they are actually destroying. The very political institutions in St. Lucia are being destroyed when others who are supposed to be saying to young people that you need to take responsibility for your life and you must take advantage of the opportunities that government have created for you. They are blaming politicians for every single problem in this country. Well, for me, anything that happened and they say, Alba, you did this, I think it's global warming or climate change that's responsible. Because politicians get blamed for everything. And I do not believe it is fair. At this juncture, we have a new government just presented its first budget to the nation, talk about better days, and you know, people come, where are the better days and where are the better days? There is no doubt in my mind that despite what the poisoners of the wellsprings of public opinion say, the better days must come. It will come because we have an experienced captain and competent deputy, and of course, I'm the navigator in the cockpit as the second deputy political leader of the party. And you have a group of men and women who are well equipped to assist in flying a vessel for turbulent times. And it does not matter what others say, we are going to keep the faith. We are not in it for fame, Mr. Speaker. We do not want to be in the Hall of Fame. We want to remain in the Hall of Faith. The faith that brought about the Labour Party in the first place. The struggle. How our forefathers fought for freedom in this land. They fought so that we in St. Lucia would live in a land of the brave. Not those that would cower in the swampland of fear in cowardice. So, Mr. Speaker, as I close, I commend this budget highly. I am very optimistic. I am very comfortable with what the Prime Minister has presented. And there is no doubt in my mind that the constituency of Labrie, during the very first year of a new Labour government, that the people of Labrie will be satisfied with the commencement of a new set of interventions. So today I take the opportunity, as the parliamentary representative for Labrie, to renew my commitment to the St. Lucia Labour Party and to the government. I thank you, Mr. Speaker.